you will increase your efficiency 20% if you learn to do the tough things first, the ones you don't want to do.
Ray Zinn now imparts his management philosophy in Tough Things First. In this series, Zinn covers it all, from the essence of human happiness,
adding value, showing that you have value,
to the downside of venture capital.
You will not own the company.
And the essence of entrepreneurial discipline.
If you're going to make it a consistent practice of working Saturdays just because you think you've got to work 80 hours a week to be successful, you're just flat out wrong.
Now here's Ray Zinn, Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO and today's guest host. I'm Rob Artigo, entrepreneur and writer. Happy to be back for another edition of the Tough Things First podcast. Hi, Ray.
Hey, Rob. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Congratulations on completing the new book, The Zen of Zen.
Well, thank you.
I know how hard it can be. I mean, I completed a book myself. It's going to be published in a few months. It'll go to the print. So that'll be really cool to have that happen. But I know how hard it is to do that. And, you know, getting through your second book must have been quite the adventure.
To say the least.
It's no secret that you've had enormous success in the business world. I mean, obviously, you've had success in the book world, the publishing world. You were the longest serving CEO in Silicon Valley, the inventor of the wafer stepper. And that's just two things, actually three if you consider the book. But it's also no secret that you attribute some of that success to being an Eagle Scout and a life and your lifelong faith in God. So would you agree with that?
I would. Now, of course, I never made Eagle Scout myself because they didn't have the program in the area where I grew up. So, but I'm very familiar with the scouting program because I served as a commissioner on the local county scouting level, and so I'm a trained scouter, as they call it.
Okay,
and both my boys are Eagle Scouts.
I stand corrected, but I knew that you were involved with the scouting program, and I guess I made an assumption based on previous conversations because you're so familiar with how that works. But certainly, your faith in God has been a big deal in your success, right?
Absolutely, no question.
I'm starting to see regular media attention for stories that suggest millennials and other people are fleeing organized religions or faith structures that they were raised with. And some of those reports have pointed to polls and general sentiment. So, Ray, you may have heard of this popular movie, God's Not Dead. But I want to ask you the question, do you think God's dead?
Obviously not. No, in fact, there's the recent studies that have been done over the past few years have shown that people who have a religious bent, as they say, are far more honest. I mean, orders of magnitude more honest than those who don't have a religious background, and so it's a kind of a shame in a way that for whatever reason. Honesty seems to be a religious thing, meaning that people who are religious tend to be more honest than those who do not have a religious affiliation. And so that's a crying shame.
What do you attribute this perception that people are turning away from maybe the faith in God of their youth as they get older?
Well, I think it has to do with the lack of attention to moral standards. In other words, it seems that society has less interest in being moral. And so, if you don't have a moral upbringing, and if morality is not a strong attitude in your life, then of course, you don't want to go to church because you'll feel guilty. And so not going to church or not having a religious affiliation allows you to get away with your attitude of, well, I really don't need to be moral or honest because it's not required by my faith, because I have no faith, as they say. And so it's just unfortunate that the whole morality aspect of life seems to be taking a back seat in the last several years.
I also think, and you tell me if you think I'm right or wrong here, but also in the social construct, what I've seen is a dynamic where people with stronger faith have a tendency to keep that to themselves because of the there is a, I think, unfair stigma Whereas if you have, if you're a Christian, for example, and people say you have a strong moral foundation in your religion, but also in your family life and that sort of thing, they may feel an indictment of their behavior just because you're around them and don't necessarily believe what they're doing is right. Even though you may not be telling them, it may not be a big thing where you're trying to tell somebody, hey, what you do is not in line with my faith or my religion.
What we're doing is we're getting onto another subject, which is called freedom of speech.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for whatever reason, you know, we believe in a freedom of speech. We say we do, but yet we don't allow people to believe what they may. We tend to hold people, you know, and hostage, as you would, if they disagree with them. And that's been in the news media quite a bit lately, that what happened to freedom of speech. So you're changing subject a little bit. You're getting off as God dead to, you know, are we able to express our opinions openly?
Yeah, I think that the idea of is God dead is it's a kind of a rhetorical question in a sense that if you believe in God, as I do, and I believe you do, is that God's omnipresent, is always there, and therefore it's a human question to say, is God dead? In other words, is God dead among people and in conversations? And I think that the freedom of speech question is the subject of God dead? So there is, I think, a unity there between the question, is God dead, and freedom of speech, because we're saying, is God dead in the social construct? Can we have conversations about God without having somebody say, well, you, because you believe in God, then you must hate me for some reason? And I don't believe that that's the case, and that has to be part of the conversation. But I see people getting uptight and upset just because there's this idea that, oh, there's a Christian in the room. Like there's a problem there. I don't understand that.
Well, we're back to the situation where people don't want to feel guilty. And so the way they can overcome that guilt complex is by disagreeing or by saying, well, you're wrong. And so they don't want to acknowledge at all that you could be right or correct. This goes, you know, into this freedom of speech issue. So if you disagree with them, and that's been, you know, kind of the harbinger right lately, they actually will be violent. I mean, they'll actually, almost become physical.
Right.
Because they don't want you to disagree with them, because now they're going to be, oh, well, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm guilty, you know, and they don't want to feel that guilt. You know, it's a sad commentary on society today that people don't want to feel this guilt. And as I mentioned earlier, this telling the truth thing is a real issue. Honesty has become, a serious problem in our society. And that's the reason why they'd rather not believe God is alive, because they don't want to feel guilty. They don't want to have to repent, as they say.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is that there are some people out there who, even though they can't wish God away, they would really prefer if God was dead in the public square. In other words, it should be anything you do behind closed doors. You know, that's your thing. You do that in church, but don't bring God into the public square.
Well, we have societies that, you know, the communist society, actually, it's atheistic. And so they don't believe in God. And we know what happens to societies that have a godless view. And they're not as prosperous. I believe that their religion plays a very important part in the progressiveness of a society. I think if we move away from that, we'll be less progressive, we'll be less advanced, and this is a serious problem, I think,
and
that we'll face.
I would venture to say that throughout history, there are plenty of examples where societal horrors were ended because of the population's shift towards faith in God, where they said God is, and of course the founding of this country is an example, where they said, no, your inalienable rights were derived from God. It's not from man. The government didn't give you those rights. These are your basic rights, your basic human rights that were derived from God. And you, when you insert that into some things, and I would say like slavery, for example, is that when you see these horrors occurring, you start to, and if you're, if you develop a faith in God, you begin to realize this is bad, and you're willing to, based on your faith, take action to end it. And throughout history, there have been horrors that have been ended by populations that have shifted Christian, for example.
And, you know, we're seeing, I think, a turn in our country back toward that, toward God and toward, you know, faith. And I think that's a big concern to some of the people who are seeing that as a danger, as actually a threat to their political environment. And so, you know, well, anyway, I hope anyway that the turn back toward God is on its way, as you would, and that we will then have that protection, I believe, that we get through God by being a God-fearing people. On the coins that we have in our society is in God we trust, and so we need to get back to that point, where we say in God we trust.
I hear you saying that you would see that as a good thing, and I certainly would agree with that if that shift it does occur. In some places in this country, there are states and even communities that the leadership will espouse some sense of openness, and I'll use the word progressive, and you know, I'm okay, you're okay, and what you do is okay with me as long as it doesn't interfere with me. But then you drop in the subject of, can I be a Christian and have my strong Christian beliefs in this environment? And you would find a place that is not friendly to your perspective and your point of view.
Well, we have to make sure that we are tolerant, whether we're God-fearing or not.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be tolerant of other people. And it's that intolerance that I think causes these conflicts, especially in politics. So we keep dragging these moral things into our conversations, and if we tend to be a moral person, then we get angry if a person who is not as moral goes the other way and doesn't feel the moral obligation to do, you know, to, like, for example, abortion or, you know, pro-life or pro-choice.
Yeah.
Or marijuana or no marijuana. And so, you know, in any society, there has to be tolerance. And so whether you want to believe in God or not believe in God, you know, we need to be tolerant of each other.
Great, Ray. I appreciate it. So if you like what you hear, well, you can make sure you subscribe to Ray's podcast, Tough Things First, at toughthingsfirst.com and everywhere podcasts are available, and get the book Tough Things First, as well as Ray's new book, The Zen of Zen. And if you haven't already done that, you might as well, because it's that good. Thanks a lot, Ray. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob.
You've been listening to Tough Things First, candid talk with Silicon Valley's longest serving CEO, Ray Zinn. Drop by the contact page at toughthingsfirst.com for more about the book, more podcasts, and links to Ray's Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn pages to keep up with Ray Zinn's wisdom daily.